contending for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Because of the inconsistency of your life. This is a struggle that Christians have because, as Romans 7 says, we often find ourselves doing the things that we don't want to do. Oftentimes we wonder, how are we even going to make it through the day? It's fascinating to me that in the midst of Jesus going to the cross, his disciples are going through a lot of turmoil, a lot of stress, a lot of fear, a lot of panic, so much so that when Jesus makes the announcement that one of them would betray him, they all cry out, "Is it I, Lord?" Maybe that's been a struggle that you've had. Every Christian goes through it. Today on Abounding Grace, the Lord has a wonderful answer for you. It is by his power that you are kept. It always has been. The power of Christ, as we see him giving his life, that his life might be given to them so that they can rejoice in his salvation. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. Visit us on the web at agradio.org. agradio.org, the number is 888-504-8805. 888-504-8805. Find us on Facebook. We're so thankful you take time out of your day to tune into the program. Here is now part one of a message that was recently delivered from Mark chapter 14, which I have titled Nourishment for the Faint of Heart. We hope the gospel blesses you greatly today on Abounding Grace Radio.
We had a beautiful example given to us last week, and I've read this morning, of this woman, Mary of Bethany, this woman who represents everything we should be. What she did was so meaningful, Jesus said, wherever this gospel is preached, what she has done will be told as a memorial to her. That is such a remarkable statement. I just cannot get over in the gospels. Where do you have that kind of response of Jesus to that kind of degree? Wherever in the history the gospel is preached, her. Came right, of course, after the Olivet Discourse, didn't it? And she was held out for us as an example of what it means to watch. He had just said watch, and then he shows us a woman watching. She rightly saw that the true temple was his body. She was concerned about the right temple. They were concerned and devastated about the fall of the earthly temple, and she all along had been listening to what Jesus was saying, sitting at his feet, this was the Mary, that this temple would be destroyed and rise again the third day. Disciples had no alarm about that. She was concerned. She saw the whole thing. She saw the whole story. As a matter of fact, this was Mary of Bethany. She saw what Jesus did for Lazarus. She saw in her brother's story, Jesus' story, didn't she? Here was presented to us a watching saint and a believing saint, and what was so remarkable about her is that she purposely had come beforehand to anoint Jesus' body for burial. A common criminal never had that right afterward, so she knew. She came believing that she had to anoint this body because this body was going to die. It's a remarkable section. She believed the promises. She believed the gospel. She believed in the resurrection. She believed the gospel, and in this extravagant moment, she takes everything that she has, and she pours out over his head, and we know that there were tears that came with this, that over his head, this alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, right over his head, purposely knowing what she was doing. Here was the true poor man on earth. This was the one who was rich and for ourselves became poor, and she saw it. This was the poorest man. They had had it all wrong. She saw what he had become for her. The others didn't. The others didn't. Everyone is standing there watching her with her tears, anointing and wiping his hair with her tears. Thousands of dollars poured out in an extravagant act as she gets criticized. Why this waste? They're all standing there trashing her. We know from the gospel accounts it was Judas who led this charge. We can put it all together. He didn't care about the poor, of course. John's gospel tells us he was taking off the top of the money bag. He was a thief, essentially, the entire time. This cross thing snapped him. There's no way I'm going to go through this. This has not paid out. So in complete contrast to this woman, here we have this other figure set in front of us who would sell Jesus for 30 shekels of silver, the very price in Exodus 21 of a slave. In some sense, let's be honest this morning, both of these examples are troubling to us. Both. The contrast is intentionally severe. On the one hand, you have the worst unbelief and hypocrisy ever, and on the other hand, you have the greatest demonstration of giving in the entire Bible. The greatest demonstration of giving. So much so that Jesus says wherever the gospel's preached, this is a memorial to her. If Judas was an example of betrayal, she's an example of true love for Christ, isn't she? Where does that leave us? See why I said it's a little bit troubling? Clearly, it's a kind of distressing question maybe to say, how much do I value Jesus to answer that? That's kind of where we're often left with this passage. We're kind of left in the balance, and you could hear that question, how much do I value Jesus? And for some, that question means absolutely nothing. They don't care. There's no interest. That's the spirit of Judas, isn't it? But then there's a sincere follower of Christ, and that's a really hard question to answer. That's a really difficult question to have to face in life. It's a distressing question in many ways, isn't it? I'd like to be a lot more like the woman. But the fact is that I'm pretty pathetic. I don't feel like I look too much like her. Do you? I believe this morning this passage addresses the real concern that we see on the heart of his disciples. There's a real purpose in this, and if you had asked all of them after they had been caught up with Judas and this hypocrisy, if you had asked all of them, stopped and said, listen, you guys, do you think Jesus' life is of much more value than that ointment that she just poured out upon him? I'm sure every one of them would have said, of course. They were caught up in hypocrisy. What did this mean for them? And this is what I want to help you with this morning. Jesus gives an answer to those who are deeply concerned because they know that their response to Jesus is pathetically weak. And Jesus here, in great compassion for them, orders things and gives them something that was meant to help them to know his love for them. We have this morning the institution of the Lord's Supper in the New Testament. It's a fascinating moment that it comes in the midst of all this, isn't it? I don't know how much you've stopped and given thought because we read these forms so quickly and we go through 1 Corinthians 11 and we read that Jesus, on the night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And we just read right over that. On the night in which he was betrayed. Huh. Would seem to me then that you have to understand the importance of the supper, why it would be interjected, it was done on the night in which he was betrayed. It's a striking inclusion, isn't it? It moves me because the whole institution was in the midst of betrayal, affliction, persecution. And now we see what Mark is somewhat doing in this text and showing us the distressing circumstance of the institution of the supper in the face of this betrayal. If we could understand why it came in the midst of the betrayal, it'll take on so much more meaning for you. You'll have something to hold on to. Why would he give it on the night in which he was betrayed? As soon as this episode with Mary closes, we have the scene turning, and the disciples are really concerned with keeping the Passover. We have a lot of detail here about that, don't we? Where do you want to go, Lord, and keep the Passover? And Jesus begins to give instructions very similar to the triumphal entry. You see that he's Lord over all. He's commanding donkeys that are his, and he's commanding rooms that are his, isn't he? He says, I want you to go and find a man carrying a pitcher of water, and I want you to follow him. And wherever he goes, say to the master of the house, the teacher says, where is the guest room in which I may eat the Passover with my disciples? Clearly you see who has all authority, don't you? Then he will show you an upper room furnished and prepared. There, make ready, prepare for us. Mark goes into some detail here for a moment to set up a scene for us, to picture a scene for us. Mark has set the stage of something, and he tells us in verse 12 how we should read these details that are given to us in God's providence. And in verse 12, we are told that it is the first day of unleavened bread when they sacrifice the Passover lamb. Huh. On the very day in history, the lamb was slain. You should know and appreciate Exodus. You see how much time we spend in Exodus for a reason. And working through all of this, you see here in God's providence what Jesus is doing here. When you look carefully at this initial scene, Jesus has recreated a scene for you. On the first night of the Passover, unleavened bread, remember what happened in Egypt? They were to go into the house. And blood would go on the doorposts. And that Passover lamb would be killed. And then they would eat that night. And they would have a great feast that night. And it all coincided with the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was the very night they would be up. They'd be ready to go. They would leave Egypt in full deliverance. Because of the blood of this lamb, the judgment would pass over them and they would face full deliverance. Now, why does this matter? Well, think of the scene here for a moment. Jesus has just recreated the entire scene in God's providence, hasn't he? He is the Passover lamb. Then followed the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which meant it was a celebration, that feast, that was meant to celebrate the fact that sin had been dealt with. That's how it's applied in the New Testament. That the old was done and the new had come was a celebration of this. He had come down to deliver his people out of the land of Egypt, and he had come down to deal with their sin and set them free. Well, his concern is that they know he is doing all this for them as it was done for Israel. Now, stay with me. You'll see how this all comes together. How does he make them understand that he is doing all of this for them? That he's the fulfillment of everything all that taught us. There's been a struggle in Mark that they have not wanted to see. They ultimately have not wanted to listen to him say he is pouring out his life, his blood on the cross. They have not wanted to hear it. Hasn't that been the whole struggle in Mark? Haven't we seen this in the Gospels? And it really is the sort of dilemma of this passage. We first and foremost look at Mary, who teaches us something so beautiful, and think, well, that is how I should be. And that is that true? Is Mary just the great example for us? Yes and no. Yes, in the sense of faith. No, in the sense that she displays something about only what Jesus can do. There was a message in her for them. I would love to look at Mary, but I think if we're going to be honest, we all struggle with, do I have the potential of being a Judas? I believe that Jesus at this point is pressing them to think through this dilemma, through the scene that he's created, and now what he's about to do. So now on purpose, he presents what I see as a distressing proposition. Absolutely distressing proposition on purpose. When evening had come, notice that we now get to this important section here in verse 17. And when it was evening, he came with the 12. And as they were reclining at table and eating, imagine this, you're sitting celebrating Passover, glorious occasion. Jesus said, truly I say to you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me. That ignited something the Spirit all wanted us to consider very carefully, because it says immediately after this, they began to be really sorrowful. One by one, we know, putting the accounts together, that they began to ask the question, Lord, I'm not the one, am I? I'm not the one. Jesus steps it up even more so in verse 22. Verse 21. For the Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born. Woe. Your supper has just turned pretty gloomy, hasn't it? They are so distressed at this point. He has utterly distressed them on purpose. He has utterly distressed them on purpose that Luke says they all began to fall apart. So much so that they began to argue about who was greatest. And the way you take that is to say they all began to say, listen, it can't be me. I did more than that guy. Right? It has to be Peter. What you hear in them is a bunch of sheep absolutely panicked at this point. Deep. Heart-wrenching concern as they're questioning now their own loyalty to Jesus. That's where this is turned. He has forced them to question their loyalty to him, hasn't he? It's a test. Completely distressed him. Lord, it's not me, is it? All around the table. It's fascinating that the gospel writers at this point do something that you have to stay with and follow, especially in Matthew and Luke. And I believe you should draw this out, because they offset another individual. It's interesting in Matthew's gospel, the disciples say, "Lord, is it I? It's not. I'm not the one, am I?" And then immediately, a few verses later, Judas says, I'm not the one, am I, Rabbi? I'm not the one, Lord. I'm not the one, Rabbi. They're wanting you to see a contrast here. They draw a division here. Jesus it says, he who dipped his hand with me in this dish will betray me. The Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born. I'm sorry, that has just evoked in everyone the worst kind of fear ever. I believe at this point you really do get to the heart of this, what Jesus is doing. If I went around the room today and we're about ready to have the supper, and I said in this room, and you were all very intent and believed that these words were so. One of you in this room will betray the Lord of glory, and it would have been better if you were not born. What would that create? It's going to test where you are, isn't it? It's going to draw out something, isn't it? It should. You ever feared you could be a Judas? There are a lot of really weak sheep here, starting right here. You know what weak sheep do? They doubt. They're often very sick about their love for the Lord. This would be an absolutely wounding proposition, wouldn't it? Absolutely wounding proposition. It would lead people into despair. This is what happened essentially with the disciples that night. Lord, it's not me, is it? Weak, broken, concerned, but sincere. What are we getting? There's something coming out here, isn't there? They've been saying, we'll go and die with him. Has that been on Judas's heart? No, he's been riding on the coattails of this rising star in Israel, and it's not paying out. Look at how committed they are. They don't understand it all. As a matter of fact, they're incredibly weak. I mean, you want to talk about a bunch of bumbling fools that Jesus chose. But you could never say they don't care, right? Judas. I wish we could. This is one of the times in the scriptures where I wish we had an ability to look at facial expressions. Judas, it's not I, is it? I don't know. But something was radically different. He is offset in the scriptures to show that his concern is nothing like the disciples' concern. He's going to take the supper, he's going to bolt out and betray him. He takes it. Doesn't ever care to come back and worship at his feet. Doesn't matter. There's nothing born again in this man. There's no life in this man. He despises what Jesus stands for. He despises the cross. He despises everything this Christianity thing represents. And he sits there the whole time walking with Jesus, doing all the ministry stuff. Why would Christ show me this woman? Why would Christ show them this woman and then show Judas? And then hanging in the balance are these very normal disciples just like us. And I believe that in the midst of this, Jesus wants everyone to know, wants them to know, and wanted every generation to know that it was always, it always had been, it always will be by his strength that he upholds the faint of heart. It's remarkable that right after this in Luke, Jesus says something that as they're distressed at the table, he begins to turn their utter despair into joy. And he says, you are those who have continued with me in my trials. And understand, you're with me in this cross. And guess what? I assigned you a kingdom, just as my Father bestowed one on me. Whoa. I'm giving you this. I'm assigning it to you. That, here it is, you may eat and drink in my kingdom, at my table. So he's ordered the events now to recreate the scene of Israel in the Passover scene to say, as Israel received full deliverance from Pharaoh, so now understand this all in fulfillment. It all spoke of me. I give this to you.
You've been listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. Once again, 888-504-8805. Or contact us on the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. Connect with us on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station or subscribe to the AG Radio podcast in iTunes or use our free Android app. Thanks for listening. And remember, where sin abounded, grace abounded more.